Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, September 27th, 2016, and our call-in number for our special guest this evening is 347-857-3293. And this is Betty Davis giving you our agenda for this evening. Tonight, we will be dealing with Burn, Baby, Burn, racism plus exceptionalism equals Americanism and disaster capitalism. A further examination of the ongoing study of the anatomy of oppression. Our news analysis this evening will continue the discussion of what is government by murder, what does the presidential debate tell us it is, and a continuation of the fact that the laws make killing legal and the orders are kill black people with or without the law. This is government by murder. To tolerate this is to commit the act of gradual suicide. So without further ado, I will pass our microphone over to Ralph Pointer. What's happening?
Good evening, brothers and sisters. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, the program, as Betty had mentioned, the agenda begins with Burn, Baby, Burn. That's a reminiscent of the call of the 60s, repeated dramatically with a match by Adam Clayton Powell when he said, burn, baby, burn, with a cigarette in one hand and looking in the air in the stance, in the pose that he is so well known for. And one of the other expressions of the 60s and the 70s was an injustice to one is an injustice to all. Another expression is none but ourselves. But I go to the burn, baby, burn because we are still being killed daily and hourly by law enforcement, so-called law enforcement. And holding one hand in the air saying, hands up, don't shoot, is not the answer. And when I say burn, baby, burn, that is to suggest that you do not have to be on the scene where things are happening. And I'll let it go at that. And so we're in the presidential election. We're tied up this evening. And for the last 6 months on Hillary and Trump. And last night was the first debate, and we, Betty and I, were with the Haitian contingent at the debates, fighting to liberate the Haitian people in Haiti from slavery. And slavery is a situation where your labor is not paid for. But one of the new manifestations of slavery is in Haiti, where Hillary Clinton, the presidential nominee for the Democratic Party, was instrumental, was very involved in fighting to lower the wage of the Haitian workers from 70 cents an hour to 40 cents an hour. Somebody said to me, well, Ralph, that was wrong. What it was she was involved in trying to lower the wage of the Haitian worker 80 cents an hour to 50 cents an hour. And I says, I cavalierly, 10 cents an hour one way or the other does not change the argument that this is slavery. This is better than slavery. And on top of that, billions were promised to the people of Haiti to deal with the earthquake, and instead the Clintons had the money transferred to friends to help build factories in Haiti to house these 40 cents an hour laborers for the profit of those companies, those corporations, those friends of the Clintons. And for me, in this day and age, and forever, my life and everyone of color's life has been affected by not only the institution of slavery, but the idea of that black people, people of color, are not human. It is always on my mind. And whenever this situation, which is constant, comes to my mind, I am enraged. And we have a movement in America. We call it the Progressive People's Movement, movement on the left. And yet, the whole left should have been there condemning not only yesterday, but ever since there was a movement condemning America and their foreign policy regarding Haiti. We should all be supporting Haiti, those representatives of freedom in the Western Hemisphere. And as for that cowardly caucus of gentlemen in Congress of color who had nothing to say when the United States Marines took Aristide out of office at the point of a bayonet, shipped him to Africa, and then put pressure on African governments to keep him there, and he was elected by 70 or plus percent of the voters in Haiti. What can we say about what elections teach us? What is the value of an election? Can freedom be won with the vote? Well, Aristide is not Ernesto Che Guevara. Aristide was a product of the church. He came through the church. And in Haiti, I believe it's more than 50% of the schools in Haiti are run by Christians, Episcopalians. And I tell you, they're not talking about revolution. And so we see the institutions of government, of culture, are all involved in the anatomy of slavery. How can we have people paying for their success in ridding themselves of imperialist slaver leaders? Well, we have not been able to overcome slavery in this country. Because a few facts came to my mind, and I hope I'm not wandering. A few facts came to my mind that in this presidential election, they discussed Mr. Obama and his record. And when people would come up to me last night and say, gee, you're talking about Hillary. I'm voting for Hillary to save us from Trump. And I said to them, you're late. Because Trump is talking about the things that Obama has already done. And a few days ago, Obama announced that he was going to begin deporting Haitians again. There was a break in deporting Haitians because of the tragedy that was happening in Haiti and because of the tragedy that was brought to Haiti by the international police force when they brought cholera to Haiti. Nobody's admitted to that yet. Or they did admit to it and said they're not going to do anything about it. And so we see all of these things are tied together. The slavery in Haiti, Obama doing what Obama has done. Trump talks about a wall that ain't never going to be built. And Obama, the deporter-in-chief, he has deported Mexicans, and he set a record for deportations. No president has ever done that. He has lied to Mexican people about his inability to do away with the prisons holding women and children who have come into the country illegally. And so another fact that has been brought to me, they're talking about Obama's last 8 years. Well, Obama wasn't responsible for the economic problems. He walked in to a situation of economic problems, and I don't know whether they keep saying it's been improved and things are looking better, et cetera, and then we have conflicting interpretation of what it means, how better things are better or worse. But I tell you a fact, an economic fact. Today, black men make 22% less money than their white counterparts with the same political, educational, social background. Black women make 32% less than their white counterparts, etc. And so, improvement, we know the figures lie. The figures are wrong. We see in Harlem, in the black communities, we have almost 50% unemployment. And the solution isn't in voting for Hillary or Trump. Everyone knows how you can build a community up and in the same way take a community down. If you have no jobs and no education, you're going to be in trouble. And the Democrats who have gotten the vote of black people infinitum, what has happened in the black communities, and we can't call them black ghettos because, as Queen Mother Moore would shout at me, a ghetto is a place where the people are segregated and they control all of the institutions and the economy in that ghetto. We never were raised to the status of a ghetto except in Tulsa, Rosewood, a few other places. And what happened there? The whites burnt them down, killed them. A young man was walking around in front of our contingent with a sign, and it said, "Don't blue lives matter too." And I knew what he was talking about. And I was tempted to say, "My friend, blue lives do matter, and they got guns to prove it." And so, but he was too insignificant to talk about, and people says, "Why are you laughing?" And I confided in them what I was thinking. They got guns to prove it. And as I started off, no society ever freed themselves without fighting. No one gives you freedom. It cannot be given. Now, I'm jumping around here. Try to follow me. I'll be off in a minute. Those who talk about African diaspora and recognizing we are an African people, we sit in New York and the Haitian community is mistreated, and I would bet a donut, a dollar to a donut, that Hillary Clinton is going to pull in above 80% of the black vote. So how much do we care about the Haitian people? How much do we care about African culture? How much do we care about anything that's political that would lift our people up? How much do we care about our political prisoners? Now, I say, your acts, our acts, tell us how much we care. It is not much. So the solution is control your economics and education, what every white community in America enjoys, community control of education, can solve our problem in the black communities, yet we're afraid to bite the bullet, and I call that more afraid of freedom than slavery. And if you don't have a job in a capitalist society, you will be moved about as powerless. There will be gentrification, ethnic cleansing, put on reservations, moved out of your communities like in Palestine. What are we talking about here when we talk about Hillary and Trump? We are talking about nothing. We are going in circles, chasing our tail, tickling ourselves to hear laughter. Well, I'm not laughing. And I've been given the hook again this evening. And so I am being pulled off stage, so I'm going to pass the microphone over to Betty Davis.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. And again, I want to remind people, our topics this evening come out of our soundbite, Burn, Baby, Burn. Racism plus exceptionalism equal Americanism and disaster capitalism. And we are discussing that in terms of this circus we called a presidential debate. Without further ado, because I see we have a lot of guests on the call tonight, I want to be able to acknowledge the next speaker. He was mentioned in the Southern University Law Center and Seattle University Law Review within the context of the Black Panther Party and the Ku Klux Klan. They actually mention our brother Larry Pinkney, and we are asked to look at the footnote involving Larry Pinkney's contribution to the struggle of the cause of freedom. We've already mentioned this brother's credentials in terms of successfully bringing a law case and winning it within the context of the UN. So I want to acknowledge that, and I also want to come back later on and give you an update. Sister Reverend Pinkney called in to give us an update on her husband. Actually, she sent an email concerning that. And if there's no one from the family on tonight, we will read her email, but I had hoped that someone from the family would be able to call in. I want to acknowledge that all of the mics are open, so we want you to cut down on your background noise. Try not to breathe heavily into the phone because all of the mics are open. And I want to ask if Brother Larry Pinkney is ready to give us a salute tonight. He had an incredible email he sent from Sister Kilu regarding a petition to Jill Stein for Mamiya. Brother Larry, thank you for the wonderful updates. Are you in the house?
I am in the house, my dear, dear sister. Salutations to you, Sister Betty Davis, Professor Sister Betty Davis, let's be real, and to Lynn Stewart, our former political prisoner, and, of course, to our coordinator in all of that, Brother Ralph Pointer. All power to the people. Let's free our political prisoners. Let's free them now, because if we don't free them now, then we are not free. All right? Want to just get right down to this and say a couple of things. The reality is, and I want to go back to the year 1968. I want to talk about very briefly what one of our current political prisoners wrote in a book entitled Die, Nigger, Die. Yeah, Die, Nigger, Die. I call it Die, Negroidian, Die. But anyway, in that book, H. Rap Brown, Jamil al-Amin, who is a current political prisoner, said the following. He said, and I quote, on February the 21st, 1968, he said, being a man is the continuing battle of one's life, and one loses a bit of manhood, and I would say personhood, with every still compromise to the authority of any power in which one does not believe. He says, no slave should die a natural death. And yes, brothers and sisters, whether you like it or not, I don't care if you watch MTV, I don't care if you watch Oprah, we are slaves. He said, no slave should die a natural death. There is a point where caution ends and cowardice begins. He said, for every day I am in prison, I will refuse both food and water. And then he went on to say that, quote, my hunger is for the liberation of my people. My thirst is for the ending of oppression. He says, quote, I am a political prisoner, jailed for my beliefs that black people must be free. He says the government has taken a position true to its fascist nature. Those they cannot convert, they must silence. This government has become the enemy of mankind, and I would say humankind, men and women alike. That was just a brief excerpt from what the brother wrote back in February of 1968. So I want to say right here and right now, all of our political prisoners, be they black, white, brown, red, or yellow, must be free. I sent an article, and I referred, this article specifically referred to the fact that the United States government has been, is, and has been supporting for years Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, Al-Shams, as they now call themselves, all right? And the Russians, in fact, sent a missile and actually destroyed 30 of them. But who were those 30? They included intelligence officers from, one, the United States, two, from Israel, three, from Saudi Arabia, four, from I'm trying to just be calm about this, but from countries throughout the Gulf states, but also Britain, which is not a Gulf state, it's Europe, and other countries. And of course, you won't read about this in the vomit stream, so-called mainstream media. You'll hear nothing about this. I think it's important that all of us understand that our government, under the guidance, direction, if you will, of drone man Barack Obama, is a government of contemptuous. It is a government that is about the continuation and the exacerbation, if you will, of the oppression of everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, and in this case, especially black people. All right? Let's understand this. We are, as A. Truck Brown, Jameel Al-Amin said back in 1978, we are slaves. We are a colonized people. The police, it is one thing for BLM, the so-called Black Lives Matter, to talk about the police. But let's understand this. The police get their power and their credibility, quote unquote, from whom? They get their power and credibility from the government. They get their power and credibility from the power elite, those who control both the Democrats and Republicans, all right? Let us understand that. Let us also understand that, you know, we don't have a debate. We don't have an election. We have a selection.
Exactly.
And even though, let's be clear about that. It's a selection, not an election. We do not have democracy in the United States. What we have is what I call, and have written about hundreds of times, what we have is a hypocrisy of democracy. So let's just be honest with ourselves, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. Let's say no more, no more to this.
Yes.
Our brothers and sisters, our sisters and brothers who have fought and have paid the price.
Yep.
And are still paying the price as political prisoners must be freed. All power to the people. They must be free. Because we are not free if they are not free.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to end. I don't want to go on and on.
That's great.
But I want to make it really clear that we everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people have an obligation and responsibility, not only to ourselves, but to humanity, to Mother Earth, to the globe, to humanity all over the world, to free our political prisoners. Whether we're talking about Leonard Peltier, whether we're talking about Brother Sepp, whether we're talking about Brother Mumia, whether we're talking about each of the myriads, and I repeat, myriads of political prisoners in the gulags of the United States, so-called United States. I'm going to end here. I want to thank you, Sister Betty Davis. I want to thank you, Brother Ralph Pointer. Looking forward to hearing from Sister Ann, and of course, looking forward to hearing from former political prisoner Lynn Stewart.
Yeah.
I'm going to end it by saying the struggle continues. A luta continua, and as they say in Swahili, la sima tushinde mbile saka. We shall succeed without a doubt. Thank you, all power to the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Larry. You always, you know, get us started here. And as I have said before, and I will say again, political labor without political rewards is political slavery. We must stop participating in this political slavery. Political work without political reward. And our reward must be numero uno, number one, free our political prisoners. But because for me, without that, you can never develop a movement about anything. I've gotten the hook again, so I will pass the microphone back to Sister Betty.
Want to remind people that October 8th, Saturday from 10:30 to 3 p.m., the College of New Rochelle, Brooklyn campus on Fulton Street, Restoration Plaza, we will be establishing what our political demands are from both political parties, because the black agenda has never been addressed by either party. I want to also make you aware that we've got a Brother Tom Syracuse waiting in the wings to give us an update on the Hofstra circus and the role of the Green Party in trying to clarify the issue. But without further ado, we're going to go to Sister Ann, because we missed her last week, and then we'll go to Sister Lynn. We have four guests. I'm asking you to please hang in there with us. We will get to you. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Sister Betty. Hi, Ralph. Hi, Lynn. I just wanted to ask, is one of the people waiting in the wings Robert Cepeda's daughter? Because if it's not, I'll read the update on him. If it's her, we can wait to talk to her.
I don't know.
Oh,
so,
we don't know. Okay, I'll read it anyway, just in case. So we have two things going on in New York State with two New York State political prisoners this week. One is Robert Cepeda's, and the other is Jaleel. So I'll do Set first and then Jaleel. We got this from our friend Nate Buckley, who's wonderful up in Buffalo. Greetings, everyone. Here's an update on Set's health from his amazing daughter, Crystal. Black Lives Matter in prison, too. I just got off the phone with my father, whose health is a constant roller coaster. This month alone, he was sent to the infirmary overnight for observation twice and to an outside hospital for emergency treatment. Every time that he returns, all of his belongings are gone. Pictures of family, his food that helps him manage his diabetes so that he doesn't have to eat unhealthy state food, letters, clothes, everything just gone. One of his friends told him that he asked prison personnel, why were they taking my father's stuff? And they responded, he's not coming back. He's going to die anyway. They take his stuff and clear out his cell in anticipation of his death because they know that they're trying to kill him. They mess with his meds, food, etc. every time as if he's not a person with actual rights. Prisoners have rights, but I know we aren't dealing with the kind of system that sees us as human anyway. He just told me not to worry, but that's not possible. That's true. It's not possible. I'm going to worry because I know that if we don't get him home soon, they will not stop until he is dead. They do it just like police killings because there's zero accountability. I'm calling the prison tomorrow to complain. it won't really do anything except that it's a reminder to them that he has family who loves him and that we're all watching them. We need to stop talking quote-unquote reform and talk abolition of this entire criminal justice system. There's nothing humane or just about this system. They treat the U.S. Constitution like a suggestion when it involves black and brown people, poor people, people in prison, etc., whether you're in prison or not. We have no rights that they feel obligated to respect, legal or otherwise. This was a hard week, but to learn of my dad's illness and how they took all his personal items just to mess with him when he's already vulnerable and sick only further confirmed what I know to be true. This system needs to be abolished. It's cruel, inhumane, and degrading. Prisoners have rights. We all have rights. They don't get to arbitrarily decide who lives and who dies. We need to remind the world that black lives matter in prison, too. I know some people will read this and ask, but don't we need the police in prisons to be safe? Really? White people already live a life of prison abolition. Go into any predominantly white middle-class community, and I will show you what prison abolition looks like. It means a life free from constant police harassment, arrest, and incarceration. It means a life where there are resources like excellent schools with well-paid teachers and healthy food. It's a life where you have safe parks where kids get to play without fear of being shot by the police. Don't tell me prison abolition isn't possible when white people are already living it. We need to combine our call for Black Lives Matter with a call for prison abolition and freedom of political prisoners. Until we connect these dots, not much is going to change. COINTELPRO made sure that prison was going to be the state-sanctioned way to end dissent. This isn't a pipe dream. Either we abolish this prison police state now, or we just need to accept that these street-style police lynchings will never stop, nor will we ever get to a place where we shift resources from punishment to human rights strategies that address our social problems. We can't demand better health care and education, but then send poor people to prison. And then Nate put a little update at the end. Set the schedule to see an endocrinologist in the near future and feels the current doctor is trying to address his medical needs. We will keep people posted as the results and if there is any need to advocate on his behalf. Thank you for all your support, and please send Seth a letter of encouragement and support and or include funds. And then we put his address at Sullivan, which you can go to Jericho NY and get. It is there. That's one update. Crystal is her father's daughter, you can tell, right? And then the other update is on Jaleel. I was really wanting to read a poem tonight, but we can postpone the poem for the moment. I got a call from Jaleel's mom, Billy, on Friday at about noon. And she was, I mean, this is a strong, proud woman, and she's now in her 80s, all right? And I could hear her voice wobbling and wibbling, and I said to myself, we are not going to have this, right? And I said, what's going on, Billy? And she said she had gotten a call from a friend of Jaleel's that he was going to Keep Lock, and he didn't know why. All right, so we mobilized a small army. This was very good. I told her, look, call Nate right away. I'll call Attica and see what I can find out, which, of course, was nothing, but I made the attempt. She called Nate, and then I called Nate when I got off the phone with Attica. He was already in the car on his way to Attica. Okay, so he saw Jaleel on Friday briefly, because by the time he got there, it was late. And Jaleel said, you know, this was just like some minor thing, right? So then Jean, who was also known as Jeannie lives in Rochester. She goes to see Jaleel every Wednesday normally. So we were talking on the phone, and she said, well, I'll go on Monday instead of Wednesday, right, to see what's going on. And this is what she put out, and we have it out on Facebook and in our emails. I visited Jaleel today, Monday, September 26, 2016. Jaleel told me that he was, quote-unquote, this is all in quotes, this is directly what Jaleel said, given a disciplinary misbehavior report, Tier 3, for unauthorized organization and soliciting for corresponding in support of the August 2017 Million Prisoner March. There is no evidence of organizing in this prison or in New York State. This is an issue of censoring political speech. They are trying to prevent me from supporting community prison activism. They are repressing political prisoners from being engaged in community development. Jaleel asked that we all call Acting Commissioner Anthony J. Annucci at 518-457-8134. I will repeat, 518-457-8134, and let the Commissioner's office know that you are calling to say that all prisoners, especially political prisoners, which of course they don't admit that he is, like Anthony Jalil Bottom, number 77A4283, should be allowed to communicate with people by mail about what is going on in our communities. So Gene said on the visit, what happened was, you know, he got
various
little...
We're going to have to cut into that, Ann. I think that was a great report. Political prisoners are the issue of this program.
And I just wanted to say one more thing. The thing is, he's having a hearing, or he already had a hearing, today or possibly tomorrow. If he gets a Tier 3 hit for sharing public information as if you were sharing a newspaper, that means he goes to the SHU for 3 months.
Thank you for that, Ann. We will make the call.
For sure.
518-457-8134. Support
yes.
our political prisoners with deeds rather than only words. The truth
Absolutely.
Be-
a lot of people have called already. It's a good thing. Tomorrow during the day, you know, just call up there, talk to them. Say, look, you know, the man was just sharing some public information. What is your problem? You know, and maybe they won't give him the hit.
Thank you for that, Ann. And with that, we're going to have to jump to Sister Lynn Stewart. Lynn, are you in the house?
I'm in the house, and I'll be extremely brief because I see how late it is and that you have people we need to hear from. So I just want to say that if anything, this election proves Emma Goldman's words, and those words which embody my philosophy as well, is that if elections meant anything, they would have taken them away from us. The fact that they allow us to go through these charades every 4 years shows how meaningless they really and truly are. Now, I do want to say that I want to commend our fearless leader, Ralph, for a statement. I don't even know if he's aware how good it was at the very beginning of his speech when he talked about the cowardly caucus of color in Congress. It's a perfect description of the black caucus. And I want to say, if you do like elections, then like them on a level where they might do some good for our political prisoners. If you go to some rally, shake the guy's hand, shake the woman's hand, and say, will you do something for the political prisoners? Will you back us up on our demands to bring them home? Will you go to the parole board? Make them pay for your political allegiance. Because right now, they have the whole black community free for nothing. And I did want to read a poem, but I think maybe I ought to skip it because I think that time is a-wasting and that people have a lot to say. I'd like to hear from Tom Syracuse. Even though I don't believe in this election process, just watching it is something to educate and, in a certain sense, understand. I do not think that either Hillary or Trump would make the slightest bit of difference in the course America is on, which is both militarily and corporate. This is the future of America. So with that, Ralph, I'll say adieu, and thank you for letting me have the time.
Well, thank you, and hang in there, because we might have a moment at the end where you can do your poem. Let me turn the microphone over to Betty Davis.
Before I introduce Tom, I want to advise everybody that Brother Larry shared with us an email. It was a letter to Jill Stein of the Green Party candidate for presidency, for the presidency, and it came from, I think, Sister Kiyu. It was written by Howard Keylor, and the organization are asking Jill Stein to take up the issue of the death camps using hepatitis C to practice genocide on our political prisoners and all of our incarcerated inmates in the prison system. It is an incredibly beautiful letter filled with lots of details talking about the medication that would cure the people with hepatitis C. And this letter was, again, as I said, written by the Labor Action Committee in California to free Mamia Abu-Jamal and the Oakland Teachers for Mamia.
Brother Gerald Smith and Brother Bob Mandel, and it was addressed to Jill Stein. Without further ado, Brother Tom, could you give us a brief overview of your thoughts this evening? Brother Tom, Syracuse of the Manhattan Green Party.
Well, greetings to the brothers and sisters who are on this wonderful blog, a blog that exposes the true nature of the system in which we live, a system which has nothing to do with democracy. And this is, of course, so painfully evident in this particular election, although we never had an election that was democratic anyway. But I don't believe that there was ever a time that the two major candidates were so unpopular as these two phonies are that are running for president. And this is a step forward, because more and more people, the majority of the American people, are beginning to realize that elections are nothing more than a sham, and that the two political parties are just two sides to the same coin. They are instruments of the people who really run this country, the big banksters and the CEOs of the big corporations. And that's why it makes no difference whether or not Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump wins this election, because they're not the ones that make the decisions. The decisions are made by those who fund them, who fund these their parties, and therefore, no matter what either one says, if it's not in the interest of the maintaining and advancing the profits of the power elite, no matter what these people say, it will not be done. It is not in the interest of the power elite to build a wall to keep out vulnerable, exploitable, cheap labor from Mexico, so that no matter what Trump says, that will not be done. It is not in the interest of the power elite to stop the outsourcing of our economy, so that will not be done. And it is not in the interest of the power elite to make any reforms in our economy, such as a healthcare system that is not involved with the profit-driven insurance industry, a healthcare system that would be for everyone. That will not be done. And it's not in the interest of the power elite to get off lucrative, profitable fossil fuels to save our planet from climate disaster. So that will not be done. The sad fact of the matter is, as long as we have a capitalist system that puts profit ahead of everything else, then we are on the road to destroying our planet. And I just, what is the role, therefore, of a party like the Green Party? The role of the party, the role of the Green Party, is not to give the people the idea that somehow we can use the electoral system to reform the system. The role of the Green Party is to expose the system, to expose the broken political, social, and economic system. That is the role of the Green Party. And sometimes I have to admit that there are people in the Green Party who do not sharply bring this point out. But that has to be the role of the Green Party. And whenever any party comes into this corrupt political system, then we can see, and it is not controlled by the corporate elite, we can see what happens. 4 years ago, Jill Stein and her running mate tried to attend the debate, so-called presidential debate at Hofstra University, and they were not allowed to even get into the auditorium. They were forcibly taken to a nearby building by security and handcuffed there to tables until the debate was over. This time, they were forcibly removed from the campus. Over 20 people got arrested in protest. None of this, of course, came out in the mass media. But it is coming to the attention of more and more people that this system is not a democracy. It never has been a democracy, and more and more people are refusing to cooperate with this system. They're refusing to vote. I would predict that less than 50% of the people in this country will be voting. And
I think the number is around 30%, Dom.
Excuse me?
I think the number is around 30%, and we're going to have to cut it off there. And we must give Jill Stein kudos for her courageous challenge for single-payer health care. That will solve many problems in America, and we need single-payer health care. And we will thank Jill for pushing that forward. But we're going to have to move on, and thanks for that, Tom.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to microphone over to Betty.
Okay, I want to acknowledge that we have a guest in the house, 269, last four digits 0001. Did you want to give us a quick shout-out? Your mic is open.
Yes. Hello, Betty. Hi, Rep. This is Dorothy Pinckney, the wife of Reverend Edward Pinckney, another
yes.
political prisoner that, you know, you're well aware of. He's actually just been moved to from Marquette Prison to Muskegon Heights. He was 500 miles away, but now he's an hour and a half away. I'm able to visit him. I did visit him on last week, and looking forward to visiting him again on Thursday. I'd just like to say that, you know, I appreciate all supporters and Raph and Lynn, Betty, thank you for inviting me to call in. I'd just like to say that, you know, we're still pushing the fact that you can be convicted with no evidence. And we know clearly that he's doing time for a crime that Barron County committed. And so we're still fighting. We have appealed the court. We have, sent appeal to the Court of Appeals for appeal bond that was denied twice. We contact.
Hey, can you hear me, Jenny Van?
Hello.
Yes, we're here, Dorothy. Please.
Okay.
Continue.
And the appeal bond was submitted twice to the Michigan Supreme Court. They denied it twice. So now we're waiting for them to review the trial and give us their decision on that. But in the meantime, my husband, he's lost weight, but his skin and his eyes are clear, so that's a good indication that he's healthy in spite of everything that he's going through. Since he's been transferred to Muskegon Heights, Michigan, they still, you know, playing the same games of intimidation and harassment. He has no changing of clothes, and they're trying to keep books, especially his mail, from him. But in spite of, he's doing good. He's right now, he's at peace, and, you know, he's focused. So, you know, we're waiting this thing out to see, you know, what's going to happen. And then I like to say that there has been a book written called Soldier for Truth by Philip Bassett. And I understand it's a great read. So it's you can get it from on Amazon, I believe. So I just appreciate it. We're still fighting. We just thank you for your support, your continued donations, which has truly been a blessing. And, you know, we're still fighting. He's still organizing. He's still teaching. He's still doing whatever he can within the prison. He's not idle. You know, he's himself, but he just got a smaller space and to do what he loves to do, and that's organize and educate the prisoners. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Dorothy. And when you visit Reverend Pinckney, tell him we're just as involved while he's on the inside knocking down the walls, on the outside knocking them down on his behalf and on the behalf of all of our leaders and political prisoners, and tell him, thank him personally for the work he did for Lynn Stewart to bring her home. It will never be forgotten.
Brother Ralph, this is Larry Pinckney speaking. I would also hope that it was wonderful hearing from Sister Dorothy. I hope that she is cognizant of the fact that this program has been, including myself, has been repeatedly talking about the plight and the challenge and the struggle of Reverend Pinckney. And in fact, the book that she mentioned, we have also broadcasted on the air multiple times. So all power to the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. And next, Betty Davis is going to...
All right, Brother Joel, we're not going to tell you what your topic should be because you are always talking about something interesting. And we want to acknowledge that our stalwart guest is on the air. We might not get to her, the sister who is always encouraging, because she got her brother out of prison. We want to thank her for tuning in. And did you want to give us a brief greeting this evening, dear? Your mic is open, 248-4529. Okay, I guess she didn't hear me. Joel, take us home. Joel, your mic is open. Take us home.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Well, I mean, come on, man.
Well, it seems to me that we're losing our guest and we're losing our time. And I tell everybody, be ready for a November surprise, because we want to know, all know, does Trump's racism trump corporatism? They are going at it, and I would not be surprised if Mr. Trump's racism doesn't trump corporatism. Thanks again.
Before we leave, I want to say to Sister Pinckney, Reverend Pinckney, I know you've got family members. If a family member would like to get on and read a sentence or a paragraph from Reverend Pinckney's latest book, we would be most appreciative. And we are pushing to get the discussion out on the radio programs in New York City. With that having been said, again, I want to thank everybody. 248, we're sorry we opened your mic and
Joel, your mic is always open. Please come back next week and join us again. Thank you so much. With that, we're going to say good night, and thank you to everyone.
Say them clear for the whole round.